Professor Al Genie is here. He joins us whenever. I want to say monthly, but it's with all the preemption from the White Sox. It becomes regularly.
That's great
to see you.
Great to be seen.
And thank you for the insight on the on Gatorgate here in Chicago tonight. But we want to talk about, and this is kind of the theme of the show tonight, the pursuit of the good life.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something that you brought to our attention. You said, okay, let's talk about three great philosophers, and we'll talk about what this means.
Yeah.
Because when I hear that, when I hear pursuing the good life, I'm like, well, what does that mean? Does that mean my pursuit of all things that are going to make me feel good? Is it the pursuit of easy street? Like, what does the pursuit of the good life mean to you, Al?
Well, this whole conversation really started with, and why I offered this as a kind of three thinkers who have offered us different ways of looking at life from a philosophical point of view. And I think what's really important to understand right now, philosophy is not poetry. Philosophy is not just, let's play speculative harmonics with words. I think philosophy is really an attempt to understand something below the surface. So, does a good life include the good life, the material good life? Yes, indeed it does. But philosophy asks, at what price? And what are you willing to do to get it? And what do you have to give up to achieve it? And all these specific issues. So I think when we're talking about the good life here, this really stems out of our first conversation when I came back after we had our little break there for a while. When you had asked me, what's the favorite philosophy book you ever read? And I said, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. And in that book, in that discussion we had last time, Frankl talks about this desperate need for meaning, that we seek meaning, that without meaning we give up life, we don't have purpose, we don't have direction, and that we are desperate seekers of purpose in life. But he doesn't offer any specific purpose, doesn't give any details about what that should be. He talks about how the assumption here is, because he's talking about Auschwitz and the genocide, about survival, family, et cetera, et cetera.
You have to live the life if you're going to philosophize.
Right, you have to live life. But he was really, he offered us this notion that the good life is about something more than just sustaining oneself and finding purpose, and that is knowing the difference between me, us, and you, and then making those distinctions and knowing how they all work. But he didn't fill that in. So what is a meaningful life? A tapioca? perhaps a great deal of money?
Hey, I love a tapioca.
Listen, who's against tapioca?
Who's against
what
tapioca?
What a lovely thing a tapioca is. That's a Philip Roth whole routine about a Jewish mother making tapioca. But the reality is, I wanted to come up with some real ideas. One of the criticisms of philosophy is, well, again, it's poetry. You just talk voids. But more than words, I want to offer three thinkers tonight. Benjamin Franklin, literally one of the great founding fathers, great minds. You know, I think we venerate the founding fathers. We're finding out, because of a play that changed our understanding of history, that there weren't that many smart ones there. But there were a couple smart ones, including Alexander Hamilton, who may, in fact, be responsible for 60% of our understanding of the Constitution and understanding of modern politics. And Jefferson certainly played a part in that, but it was Hamilton who really formed the Constitution more than anything else. But Franklin was a founding father, literally a founding father, but from the time he was a young man, he was trying to build a civilization, trying to make Philadelphia real, trying to make Philadelphia a minor Paris. Never quite occurred.
That's a nice city.
But you have to remember, Philadelphia was our first capital.
Right.
Philadelphia was more important than New York, than any other city in America until well into the 19th century.
Okay, so we got Benjamin Franklin.
Franklin was one of them. Then, you know, I wanted to cross the pond because we're so interested, because this week my favorite person is the English ambassador to America. just for his witty way of phrasing things, et cetera, et cetera. Bertrand Russell. We're sitting across from the University of Chicago. Bertrand Russell won the Nobel Prize. University of Chicago claims Bertrand Russell as one, because he was there that year as a guest lecturer. But Bertrand Russell is a curmudgeon philosopher, this man who understood mathematics. The reason your computer works, the reason computers exist at all, is partially because of Bertrand Russell and Principia Mathematica that he wrote with Whitehead, this understanding of mathematics at another level. But he was also this curmudgeon philosopher who wanted to talk about how do we balance life beyond mathematics, et cetera, et cetera. And then, I always mispronounce it, I pronounce it Mahatma Gandhi, this little man, by the way, who really got his bones in South Africa. People don't realize
that. Yeah.
He formed his political points of view. He formed the African National Congress, helped form the African National Congress, and then went to India both as a philosopher, prophet, and a politician, and helped free that. By the way, my favorite Gandhi quote, so I don't forget it, and when coming back to England after World War II and was all over, now he's come back as Gandhi. Now Gandhi the sage in his loincloth.
He's capital G Gandhi at this point.
Capital G Gandhi at this point. And they ask him, the British correspondents were sent to him, well, how does it feel to be in civilization? What do you think about civilization, Mr. Gandhi? And he looks at him and he says, that is a very good idea. Brilliant, brilliant kind of man. So I think these three men offer us real handles.
Let's do this, because you've got great notes here, and we'll talk about Benjamin Franklin. We'll talk as well about Bertrand Russell and Mahatma Gandhi coming up here as we talk about their philosophy when it comes to the pursuit of the good life. We'll do that coming up right after the break. Professor Al Genie, our resident philosopher, is here. So let's get to it. Extension 720. Professor Al Genie in studio, our resident philosopher. He is the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business. He's also the author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. He's a regular contributor here to Extension 720. Tonight we talk about the pursuit of the good life. Three philosophers, three giants, really, talking about what this means, and we're going to get through all three of them. Let's start with Benjamin Franklin. People, I think that's probably going to be the one that most listeners are going to know about, because obviously he
But they know about him because of the keychain in the sky and electricity and the Franklin stove, which changed domesticity in America because you really had heat, et cetera, et cetera. And they know him, again, for being the founding father and the first great international diplomat, that he went to France and convinced a lot of people to, you know, back the revolution, to offer us money, et cetera, et cetera.
I didn't realize this because I read The British Are Coming, the book. We just did a long conversation about it.
Yeah.
And I should have known this, but Benjamin Franklin had already lived a life by the time the revolution came around. He was only around, I think he died not too long after the war,
After the Constitution.
After
the Constitution.
He was already a statesman.
And don't forget, in the 60s in those days.
It was like the 80s.
Washington died at 63.
Right.
And he was an old man. And he died of a very strange infection in his throat, but without going into that. So don't forget, lifespan was an entirely different thing.
Right,
he was an old man established. But even as a young man, he was an entrepreneur. He was always a creator. He was always this. He was a product of the Enlightenment without being necessarily in touch with the Enlightenment in Europe. He wasn't Jefferson. Jefferson read everything. In fact, one of the great phenomena that people don't realize, he spoke four or five languages, including Italian. And by the way, who do you think introduced spaghetti to America? Thomas Jefferson, to feed his slaves as a product. Okay, so Jefferson was really a polymath and a polyglot and could do all these things, but Franklin was a real guy. But a curious real guy and a printer and a publisher. And at the age of 20, he realized that societies don't really work by just having stuff, but by the values that the societies are based on. And those values are always individual. So what we have to do is come up with not simply the Ten Commandments, and by the way, these Ten Commandments, take the first four away if you know, and the other six are really rules by which civilization, people can live in civilization, right? This is where Freud is right. You gave up, you recognize that property equals real property and your wife and your husband and how you manage all these things. But Franklin said, you know, we need guidelines by which that we can found societies, communities, and nations. And so he came up with some really basic 13 of them.
So these are his virtues. These are things he used to guide his life.
And remember what a virtue is. I'm not going to quiz you on this now because your last quiz was, ladies and gentlemen, just abominable.
The virtue is it's a cider, right?
Virtue is a cider. Yeah, that's right. Jason's virtue cider. It's delicious. Virtue is a habit that you choose to perform which increases the pleasure or the goodness of life.
Okay.
So running every day, you know, it's a habit you choose that increases the good life.
So virtues are what you're pursuing. When you talk about the pursuit of the good life.
You choose to practice, you know, to watch your diet.
That's great, okay.
So virtue is not this mysterious sacred thing. It is an action you choose to do.
Okay.
So he comes up with 13 virtues. Starts off with temperance. You know, do not eat to dullness. Do not drink to elevation. Because one of the major problems, Lincoln still talked about it. What did everybody do? You know, Grant drank. Everybody drank. Why did they drink? the water wasn't clean. What else did you have? You got up in the morning and you worked until it was dark, and then what did you do? But Franklin was very aware of that. You had to control that, otherwise you had moths.
That's a great point. Eat not to dullness.
Yeah.
And drink not to elevation.
Right. In fact, just recently on another station known as NPR, they talked about this report about people who sit all day long, then go home and watch television all night, have a higher incidence of heart attack.
No doubt.
No doubt at all. Right. I mean, the old argument is you're not doing anything. You're eating a great deal. You want a pleasure, and so that you get. So the reality is we got to watch that.
Right.
Aren't we a phobic right now about fat in this society? That's a great book title, by the way, Phobic About Fat, but we'll come to that. The second one is silence. Speak, but do not feel obligated to speak continuously.
Spoken like a true talk show guest.
No, seriously.
I know.
Silence. I mean, I think there's something, you know, silence is golden. Well, knowing when not to say something is as important as knowing when to say something. And I think that's what he's talking about, that empty-handed conversation. I remember going to Italy as a student in the early 60s, or it was in the early 40s or 50s. I can't remember, it so long ago. In the early 60s, and going to these little villages, and these men are sitting around, they're both playing little domino games, and talking. And what they were talking about was nothing, but the need to talk is part of it. But the excess talk breeds less than acuity and less than logical performance.
Okay, so
order.
Silence. Order.
Yeah, you know where things fit. Understand there's an order. Understand this procedure. My wife is a logistics specialist. She understands the sequence of things. She understands how you do things. She understands when you do things. And she tells me exactly what to do. And you know what? It works.
It works.
There is something about organization.
Order. And order. Okay.
Right? Resolution. When you do set out to do something, finish it. Don't start anything with a half result.
So if
isn't that what you complain your kid about all the time?
And also, we just started. We kind of started a restaurant club, Pete, Jen, and I. So now that's a great point. Resolution. We need to finish it. We just started it.
Yeah.
We can't just let it die in the vine.
Right. Right. I mean, but
if we want to pursue a good life.
If you want to pursue a good life. No, just to pursue an organized life as well as anything else. I mean, doesn't everybody wish that you had done half the things you talked about?
Yeah.
But I think there are things that can't be done and you dream about. But when you decide to do something, do it whole heart.
Isn't that at the core why we come up with bucket lists? Isn't that the idea that we're like,
but
when
we're
it
also
comes
talking
to resolution?
About practical things like, I'm going to quit drinking. That doesn't mean I'm only going to have two drinks a day. It means I'm going to quit drinking. And that resolution, and you know, the AA, I've had some difficulties with AA. I'm not a member of AA, and I don't think I'm an alcoholic. But the reality is, the real message is not necessarily the God part, although that's an important part. It's being sober is day to day, one day at a time. And because every day is hard enough to do it. And you can't resolve to do something your whole life, but you can resolve to get through the day. And because you are, you know, one drink is too many and two drinks are never enough, right?
Right.
And so there's this real problem. So resolve.
Okay, so resolve.
And I talked about that with students all the time. Frugality. Make no expense that you don't necessarily need, but really about waste nothing. And this is now a primitive society. But frugality here is we live in a consumer society. We buy stuff rather than fix stuff. We reduplicate things for no reason whatsoever. I wonder how much we could really save by just cutting back. Yeah. One of the new things in the economy right now, they're talking about, gee, we've got this great unemployment rate. But people aren't buying a lot. Now, remember, this whole system is based on consumption, consumption, consumption. But for reality, for private well-being, you need to be somewhat frugal.
Right.
Industry. Actually, work.
So work fits in here?
And work really fits in here. The work is necessary. Work is good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Should we go through this? Sure.
Yeah, let's keep going.
Yeah. Sincerity. That is, don't lie. Don't say anything. I mean, this seems obvious, isn't it? That if you're going to say something, say it clearly. Say it exactly. Don't overly embellish. Tell me what you really think. Don't just superfluous words, the cosmetic covering of candy, you know, confectionery kind of words. You need something more than that. And to depend on something is the greatest thing you could say about a friend. I can depend on them. Okay? Justice. We don't expect to be injured. We have to make the commitment not to injure others. We have to be concerned
about justice is a good one.
Yeah.
Moderation.
Moderation.
Not, yep.
I mean, what thinker doesn't talk about that? And moderation, and Aristotle always talked about do everything in moderation. He did not mean the following, which undergraduates always think. If there are 500 women in Athens, it would be excessive to sleep with all of them, and it would be ridiculous to sleep with none of them, so the golden mean is 250 of them. That's not that's what we not mean that. By moderation. Moderation is understanding that, you know, it's that last, remember in the Monty Python, the meaning of life, just one more bite, remember? And then he explodes.
That's great.
Okay.
All right, we got to go quick through these here.
Cleanliness.
Cleanliness.
But believe it or not, it's huge. In
it's interesting to see that Benjamin Franklin has that in there. Yeah, of course.
Cleaning oneself. Tranquility. That is, understand what you're going to get mad about and understand what you're not going to get mad. Understand what to let go of. As a parent, we both know there are times you either get in there full face
or
just shut up.
Right, absolutely.
Chastity.
Chastity.
He doesn't mean it. He means that venery, sexuality, is a good thing, but one shouldn't get lost in it as the only pursuit. Mm. And finally, humility. And this is his phrase, imitate Jesus and Socrates. That's the brand of most Unitarians, and that is these individuals.
It's fascinating, too, and we got to take a break, but Benjamin Franklin, known for so many different things, to be a philosopher and to really plan out or to give a roadmap for these virtues. It's not something I would think was part of his repertoire, but it was.
But it was. And in fact, I'll tell you one other thing. He was the founder of the American Philosophical Society.
There you go.
Which still is in existence and which I am still a member.
All right. Professor Al Genie in studio, our resident philosopher here on Extension 720. We're talking about the pursuit of good life. Benjamin Franklin, we're going to talk about Bertrand Russell and Mahatma Gandhi coming up here on Extension 720. We'll take a break, get the news. Stay with us. Extension 720 here on 720 WGN, high atop the Chicago River, the mouth of the Chicago River. Beautiful night tonight here in Chicago. Some oppressive temperatures coming through tomorrow, maybe some severe weather tonight. But wow, what a night here to do radio, broadcast across the plains, 720 WGN, to talk about the pursuit of the good life. Professor Al Genie is here. He is a professor of business ethics at Loyola University of Chicago, the Quinlan School of Business. And he also is our resident philosopher, as well as the author of the book, The Importance of Being Funny. Sorry about that, Al.
It's all right.
Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. I know the book. I just couldn't remember all the words you strung together.
I can't either, and I wrote them, so it makes it more difficult.
All right, so we got through Benjamin Franklin in the first part, so let's continue our conversation. Right. Three philosophers that really have set up what we're talking about, the pursuit of the good life.
Can I just make one correction? Yeah. Let's not call them philosophers, because that's a bad name. It's like calling somebody a gerbil.
Aren't you a philosopher?
Yeah, I am, but I think for a lot of people, that's a negative. These are great thinkers.
Okay.
And Bertrand Russell certainly was a PhD in mathematics and in philosophy. And Bertrand Russell was, I think, a very curious and wonderful fellow. He was a social liberal. He was also a follower of both the English and the French Enlightenment. That is, he had read Locke and Rousseau and Montesquieu and Diderot, but he really believed in the power of reason, and that reason is the key here. That our only and great talent was reason. That's why his fascination with mathematics and so on and so forth.
I would only put him in a mathematical category.
Yeah.
I guess you're right to say philosophers are not. I just did not know much about him outside of math.
Well into his 80s and 90s, he was part of, it was the anti-Vietnam protests, and he lived a long life with many, many wives and many, many mistresses, and a pursuit of the good life was for him a life of reason. And he gives these 10 rules, and these 10 rules are also based on how socially.
So these are the rules about pursuing a good life.
His 10 rules. Number one, do not feel absolutely certain about anything. Recognize that reason has to be come to, or deal with reason, that a certainty, there's this wonderful, wonderful story of one Brahmin talking to another Brahmin in the Indian tradition, saying, and what holds the universe together? And the other Brahmin says, the universe is held together because it is on an elephant's back. And the Brahmin says, yes, and what holds up the elephant? And the other Brahmin looks at him and says, a turtle, of course. And so what Russell was talking about, you know, to be absolutely certain about anything, that you have to think it through, not simply believe something to be true.
I believe this to be relevant today. I find myself more often than not, especially in the world we live in, where information just comes at us, and it uses the same channels.
Yeah.
You know, it uses the same channel, so you're like, that must be true. That must be true. And I'm finding myself more and more, not just in my profession, but as a in my personal life, to recognize with that there is uncertainty in the certainty.
Yeah, you know, this media, this wonderful thing that gives us access to so much, is still susceptible to Goebbels' threat and prognostication that say the big lie often and frequently enough and hard enough and becomes a big truth.
Right.
So there is a danger to this. Right now on HBO, they're doing that special on Roger Ailes, and it's clearly the case that he was going to mismanage the truth by simply repeating it again and again and again. So there's be absolutely certain of nothing. Now, the danger in that is, then what is a surety? How can you proceed? But what he's really saying is, don't believe in something just because it's a belief. You know, I'm a Catholic because my parents are a Catholic.
Right.
No, choose to be a Catholic.
Choose to be.
Or choose to be.
To quote a modern day philosopher, Flavor Flav, don't believe the hype.
That's right.
That's what he said. So just helping you out.
Thanks, because I read them all the time. I just forgot that quote. Secondly, do not think it worthwhile to proceed by concealing evidence. Evidence is the key to reason.
Don't cover it up.
Don't cover it up. Deal with it. I mean, you never want to talk about this. You know, denial does work. I want to suggest that denial, is not just a river in Egypt, you know. But denial does work. You know, I've got cancer and this is a terrible fate, and I could deny it as perhaps denial helps. But when you're really talking about the larger things in life, you know, deal with what's in front of you. Don't just deal with pipe dreams. What leads you to is madness.
That's great.
Never try to discourage the thinking for never try to discourage thinking, for you are sure to succeed. When you discourage thinking, when you say, again, there's where denial comes in. When you deny thinking, you absolutely prove the point. You're not thinking about it at all. Number four, when you meet with opposition, even if you should, even if it comes from your husband or your children, endeavor to overcome it by argument and not by authority.
Mm.
I remember my father saying to me, and the father said to you, as long as you live in my house, you'll live by my rules.
Right.
Yeah, that's authority. But there was another argument here I said to him once, but why do I want to live in your house?
I have to say, this is one that I think a lot of young parents probably can hone in on and understand, because I have an 11-year-old son. He's about to turn 12. He's questioning everything.
Everything.
And I delight in the argument. My wife delights in the authority.
Yeah.
She in this way that she will be like, why are you even arguing
it's
about
easy.
This?
It's easier to say. It's because
it is.
Because it is.
And I'm like, well, why do you think that? And I'm causing, and there's no doubt I'm causing strife. But at the same time, I'm trying to get at the lessons that are learned through trying to think something out.
Right. And I think
it's super annoying.
And when he's talking about this whole history, it is super annoying. He's talking about this whole history that fiat voluntatis tuus, my will be done, is a way of managing life. But it's not a way of understanding life and understanding what you're doing.
Well, absolutely,
in life.
Man.
Okay.
That's great.
Have no respect for authority of others. But always look for the contrary. Authorities can always be found. The theme here is clear. Think your way through this. Don't just act because you've been told. Don't just knee-jerk. You're responsible for yourself. Integrity means this unity of beliefs, and that I'm responsible for my beliefs. That means you should be responsible for your thoughts and your actions. Yeah.
I'm digging Bertrand Russell.
Yeah, there's a lot there to be said.
Yeah.
Do not use power to suppress opinions. It's a way to because that will suppress you as well as others.
That
power, does all power. Power is absolute, and all power is power. Excuse me. Try that again, Lord Acton. Absolute power corrupts, and it does. And so you have to be very careful how you use power.
Al. Next.
Right. You know, as a parent, how many times can you say X?
Right.
And then you're.
I know, as a talk show host, what are you talking about? That's like the idea of what I say goes, right?
Sometimes. Number seven, do not fear to be eccentric in your opinion. Eccentricity is the catalyst for change. And I think every idea isn't great. We were talking about artists. You just quoted that chap. But you know
Flavor Flav. Yeah, I'm not sure we're really talking about contemporary artists, but go ahead.
But
go
you
ahead.
Know what I mean here. Yeah. I think eccentricity is the growing point in life. And eccentricity, that's what art is about. You put something out there and it creates a thought, something greater than itself.
It also combats the group thought. This idea that my opinion doesn't matter because it's not the mainstream opinion that's happening.
Eccentricity does not necessarily mean being the oddball, being... being the dark villain. It doesn't mean being obnoxious, but it means I think my own thoughts. I'm responsible for my own
self. And it seems to be a trend here. When you look at all of these, it's this idea of thinking it through. Right. And if you do these things and you think through, you will get to a point where your opinion may be different.
And again, this is the thoughts you keep.
I love it.
This is the thoughts of a mathematician, because a mathematician will say
my favorite mathematician
S equals
ever.
M. M equals P, therefore S equals P. Because if the first term is equal to the second term and the second term is equal to the third term, the first term is equal to the third term. And he's trying to do that. Think, think, think.
Love it.
Find pleasure in intellectual dissent rather than passive agreement. Passive agreement will get you friends, but will not get you truth. You know?
Come on.
Come on.
That's think so
about,
good.
Think about that.
I feel like I need to do a little bit more research on this dude. I like this guy a lot.
And remember, tomorrow is the midterm, so you're in trouble. Number nine, be scrupulously truthful. Truth is not something that's convenient or inconvenient. It simply is.
Okay.
And I think, again, this denial thing, to say I've got cancer and now I'm going to deny what all the options are is not the same thing as I'm not going to deal with my cancer at all.
Right.
You know, I mean, there can be something good in denial. My wife is a paraplegic. She's not, you know, and I'm just going to deny that and try to live around that. That's therapeutic. But you can't deny that she's a paraplegic. You can't deny that your child needs help. Interesting, last night I watched Joe Biden talk about his son, second son, who has some real emotional and mental health problems. And he said, we don't deny it here. We work with it. And he has a chance to be better. And number 10, do not feel envious of the happiness of those who live in a fool's paradise, for only a fool will think that they are truly happy.
That's great.
You know, it's
wow. Wonderful.
You know, a bottle of bourbon may not get you to solve all your problems, but for tonight it will. You know?
Oh, man. Bertrand Russell. It's hard to top, but maybe we can do that. Mahatma Gandhi coming up next.
All right.
But this was great as we pursue the good life. We
good
talk
life.
About Benjamin Franklin and now Bertrand Russell. We'll continue here on Extension 720 with our resident philosopher Al Genie right after the break, so stay with us. Man, I'm looking for the good life. Something that you can't imagine, something you don't know. Man, I'm looking for the good life. Baby girl, I got in pursuit of the good life. Professor Al Genie is here. He's our resident philosopher on Extension 720. And he is giving us three different perspectives on that pursuit of the good life. We heard about Benjamin Franklin. We just had a great session on Bertrand Russell. I gotta say, my favorite mathematician of all time. And now we wrap up our conversation, our last thinker, Mahatma Gandhi.
Yeah, and I want to put Gandhi into perspective. We don't have much time, but I want to give the essence of what he's talking about. Gandhi was both a spiritual individual who believed in a way of looking at life and the dignity of life, and also a politician who was a masterman at it, and also a master planner, and also had his faults, et cetera, et cetera. But he offered a list of seven deadly sins in the real world.
And so we did the seven deadly sins.
Yeah, and they're what? And remember, they were about these little personal faults, et cetera, pride and envy and sloth and anger. But here's Gandhi talking about the real sins are the sins you commit against others. Mm. And so sin is always public.
And that gets in the way of the pursuit of the good life, because the good life, as we're talking about, is not necessarily about your life.
That's right.
It's about living the good
know
life.
Know the difference between me, us, and we.
Right. So, I'm learning. See, I can learn.
You're still having a hard time passing this course. We'll talk about your mother's called. We'll talk later. Anyway, Gandhi's list of seven deadly sins is social. First of all, wealth without work is abominable. Just simply to have money and to live a life just on the backs of others becomes this, you know, this abominable notion. He was talking about the colonial period there, where the English lived off the work of the Indians and so on and so forth. But he meant that across the board.
And we're seeing it. I mean, that is a contemporary issue, of course.
It's a real issue. Yeah. Pleasure without conscience. Yes, pleasure is something to be pursued. But at what price?
Right. What's the consequence?
We've got this guy in the news right now. Pleasure. Sexuality is a good thing. Not with children.
Right.
And there are consequences to that. Science without humanity. You know, our big concern right now are we going to have genetic babies. I've had my friend Ron Green on years and years ago. We did that as a show about planning your babies. Well, there are a good side to that. So we could get rid of that gene in you that leads to epilepsy. We get rid of that gene in you that leads to perhaps lung cancer. Hmm. But we also, there's a danger of, can we make an army of Schwarzeneggers?
And I think this also goes to number one, number two, but just this idea that it becomes about money.
Right.
Or it becomes about something else besides humanity.
Right. It's kind of humanity. And science has to be really really about the service of humankind, not simply the advancement of egos. Knowledge without character.
I'm out.
I mean, right, boom, me too. I've learned, I had a big insight on my trip, and I really want to share this with you, that I'm well-read, but I'm not wise. Mm. And I think that there's a real difference, and that's what he's talking about. Just to be smart, but to have no integrity, to have no values, makes you a very dangerous person. Mm.
That's. I think you're talking about Wall Street?
I'm thinking I'm talking about, what was the character in the Batman series, the Joker?
The Joker.
The smartest guy there, but always the most dangerous. Mm. Politics without principles. Ah, that never will happen, will it? Imagine that. Politics without principles. The whole purpose of politics is the well-being of the polis. That's what it means in Greek. The well-being of the polis. The well-being of the community itself. So without knowing those things, you're just a manager rather than being in charge. Mm-hmm. Commerce without morality. Okay, so I teach business ethics. This one appeals to me. But think about that. What is the purpose of commerce? We keep forgetting that. Purpose of commerce is to make life better. To make life, you know...
I guess, but you know, I think the purpose is making as much money as possible for myself.
Oh, that's... Again, you're failing this course.
I know, I understand, but I think that commerce, that word, it's very interesting. Yeah. That word has shifted over time. Commerce is about money.
Making money. But the purpose of commerce is to make life better. And I'll give you a classic example. The back of your pair of Levi's. It's two mules trying to pull a pair of pants apart. Because when Levi's first met Levi's in San Francisco, they were 22 cents a piece. Cowboys came in every year and bought two pair, one to work in all day and one to dress up on Saturday. 22 cents a piece, and you couldn't rip them apart. Mm. It was a service, okay? And finally, worship without sacrifice. That is, to say I really love my children, but not to send them to school. To say I really love my children, but not to vaccinate them, not to have a crisis on our hands right now, or debate on our hands. To say I love my wife, but to have a mistress. To say I'm concerned about my community, but never to tithe. That is to believe something without acting on it makes you a hollow man, makes you a hollow person.
As we wrap this up, and you know, you brought us these three, and you think about, you know, the concept of pursuing the good life. Why is it important? Why at the end, when you read all this stuff and it's all great, it's all the rules for us to follow.
Right.
But at the end of the day, why is it important?
Because we don't live alone. Because we live with others. And others requires us to ask a question beyond self. And the good life means to live well with others. Socrates is right. Philosophy is not about the pursuit of wisdom, monies, or power. It's the pursuit of learning to live well with others. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it's about for me.
Great to see you, as always.
Good to be seen.
And I appreciate you bringing this in and doing the work to enlighten us all. Professor Al Genie, the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. He's also the resident philosopher here on Extension 720 and the author of The Importance of Being Funny, Why We Need More Jokes in Our Lives. We'll see you soon.
I hope so.